If you'd like to join us for Tuesday Topics, come to the Politics Room at ourplace.acbradio.org at 9 Eastern on Tuesdays. Good evening and welcome to Tuesday Topics. I'm Paul Edwards in Miami, Florida, and I'd like to thank Debbie Hazelton in Broward County and Rachel for recording this evening's program. And I'd also like to, of course, thank Dave Williams, who will be doing the edit of this program to turn it into an exciting ACB radio broadcast. Obviously, as well, I'd like to thank George Byes and Talking Communities for making this software available to us that allows Tuesday Topics to happen. What we hope to do tonight is to talk about tips and tricks that people have, little techniques that they've developed for doing some really cool things. And later in the program, I'll be talking about a place where you can put those tips and tricks, and a place that has a little over 20,000 of them that you can get access to. So, tips and tricks, things that make the life of a blind person a little easier, little techniques that you've developed that you think might be of interest and of help to other folks who are blind and visually impaired. That's what tonight's program's about. And let's see who has the first tip or trick. And please, no dog noises.
This is Gary Wood from Lansing, Michigan. Before I tell you about the one that I use now, people, you know, spread butter on bread, but when I was at a rehab center, I did it that way, but sometimes I put a hole through the bread. It's probably because the butter might have been hard, but I told that to a friend of mine, and he gave me an idea that seems to work for me. Instead of using a knife to spread butter on, he says put it on a spoon and then, you know, go. Then put it on the bread that way.
I would like to know if there's anybody who, as a blind person, knows how to roast marshmallows.
Sure. Everybody knows how to roast marshmallows.
Yeah, but I'm talking about how to actually, like, know when they're done.
Well, the approach that I use is to kind of gauge the fire with my first marshmallow, pull it out fairly frequently to try to establish what the state of the marshmallow is, and then once I've got that gauge, I can pretty much judge how long I need to leave it in for, and therefore my second and third and fourth marshmallows come out absolutely scrumptious.
I'd have to say for me, this is Chris Maddox in Maine here, just wanted to let you know that as far as spreading is concerned, I have come across the same thing you came across, Gary, about using a spoon and putting the butter on. I think that's a wonderful idea because sometimes, you know, I think I have a hard time knowing, especially as a blind person, knowing how much, number one, is on there, and number two, if you've got enough, because sometimes I tend to spread it, and it's just like there's such a thing as too much, so it's like I'm always asking a staff person, now that I'm in an assisted living group home, and then they help me, and they say, Chris, you have enough.
My question, Christopher, is there such thing as too much butter? I've never known a situation where there is. But then, of course, not everybody is like me and enjoys eating only butter with their bread, or rather bread with their butter, which is really more like it. I'm not sure that I made it clear to everyone, but what happens with the marshmallows when you're roasting them is if you touch them when you pull them out, just very lightly, when they first start to cook, they're hard, and when they get closer and closer to being cooked, there's more and more give in the outer shell of the marshmallow, so that if you kind of monitor them fairly frequently, you really can get to a point where you can roast marshmallows pretty successfully, and only burn them when you want to.
You know, sometimes a little bit of the marshmallow leaks down onto the burner, and so if you don't clean it, you know, it gets to be a sticky, gooey mess. Yuck. Chris, why would you worry about too much butter? I agree with Paul. There's no such thing. Now, one handy-dandy method that I used, and again, I don't think I burned down the house doing this, was to, this is on an English muffin. I just put a pat of butter down in the middle of the muffin, pop it in the toaster oven, and voila, you know, afterwards the butter would melt all over the muffin, and if we were lucky, it didn't get all over the toaster oven, and, you know, it seemed to work all right.
This friend of mine that told me about the other thing, put it upside down on the plate and then heat it up in the microwave, and then you have it really, really good that way, you know, with butter. But, well, you know, they say butter's bad for you, too much of it, or too much of anything is not.
On the marshmallows, if you take, like, a coffee cup or something and set it so that your wrist is on it, so that you get a, you know, the same distance from the heat every time, just count, you know, and then you'll know how long, you know, to count until you take it away. On spreading things, Chris, you can also, if you hold the bread or whatever in your hand, you can tell kind of where you're going to with your spreader.
Gary, am I assuming that what you use to spread the butter on the bread is the back of the spoon instead of the front? So you use the back of the bowl of the spoon or the outside of the bowl of the spoon?
Well, I put it in the butter tub, you know, and then I guess it probably is the back, but well, I've used my finger to daub the butter off and then put it on the bread and, you know, spread it, but that's the cheap and dirty way, I suppose, but someone said, I guess my mother said, I could just put the spoon on the bread and then go from side to side with it, you know, till it goes all the way around.
So what you primarily use the spoon for then is to get sufficient and about the right amount of butter out of a tub of butter. And so this method probably wouldn't work for like a stick of butter.
Well, probably not. That's what I use is a tub of butter or margarine, yeah.
Thank you, Gary. All right, so marshmallows and butter. Other suggestions?
Well, there's this thing with the... I suppose it's been talked about before, but you know, labeling microwave ovens and like I have the Sharp for about 15 years, it still works pretty good, amazingly. But I had to, or we had to put a template on there so we could, that a Braille template, you know, so that I could feel it, you know, the letters and or the numbers rather than. Then you get some kind of a membrane that's hard to feel, you know.
Basically, I found the easiest solution to that was to make our own template. When we just bought a new microwave here a couple of weeks ago, and it so happened that the lady who we employ on a weekly basis, kind of do whatever we need done at the time, some cleaning and some other errands. Anyway, they went and bought the microwave, she and Pam did. And they brought it home, and I sat down and wrote out some, some numbers and letters and popped them where they needed to be on the microwave, and we now, it took about 2 minutes, and we have a Braille microwave. I can't remember what kind it is. I think it's a Sanyo, but it just seemed like it's a lot easier than waiting around for somebody to do a template. Just write our own, and it worked out fairly well. Okay, another little hint, charcoal. When you're a blind person, charcoal going has sometimes, maybe to some, seemed like not a possible thing to do. And a lot of people like to do it with propane. I don't. I personally like the charcoal myself. And what I have found over the last 13 years or so, and partly from Pam, partly NFB, was that, and partly a friend of mine in Porterville, I bought what's called a barbecue chimney, and basically this is a really neat little device. It's like a double-sided can, an open-ended can with a partition in the middle. In the top of the can, you put your charcoal, and you can put it a lot or a little bit, whatever kind of fire you want. You put the amount of charcoal you want. In the bottom, you put some kindling. Usually, a piece of a paper bag works well, I found, or just a piece of paper of any kind. You light a match to the bag, and just basically stand there for 15 minutes or so, and voila, you have a fire. And you just you take the charcoal out of the and put it on the bed of the grill by turning the device over with a handle that's provided with it, and you put the grill itself down, and voila, you've got a fire, and it works nice. I have never in my life, not in my barbecuing existence, I have never once used lighter fluid, ever. And nor would I plan to. This is too good a means of doing it. And it's a lot more environmentally friendly, too.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you don't have that smell of barbecue, of lighter fluid. And our next-door neighbor, when he first saw us cooking, he was a little bit dubious because, yes, there was a tiny bit of smoke, but it... The chimney was getting old by then. Our chimney, we just replaced it after, 10, 11 years. And he was a little bit concerned, but now he's gotten used to it. And he's gotten used to us. And he doesn't, he just goes right along with everything and just smiles. How are you? You know, he had to get used to us. But now that he is, everything's fine.
Well, I want to know what time dinner is, because there's nothing like charcoaled anything. I cook on gas on the outdoors. On inside the house, I use electric, but outside I use gas. I've always been leery of charcoal, even though I prefer the taste of anything cooked that way. And on gas grill, I often use those baskets that you can put food in and easily turn the whole basket with whatever's in it, meat or vegetables or fish. It works real well outside.
Excellent. Let me go back a couple of topics to marking, and I guess I'd make 3 points. First, there are a lot of manufacturers who do make Braille templates, and while I understand what you were saying about how, quote, easy it is to make Braille templates now, and I agree with that to a large degree, I think that there are a lot of us who went out of our way to persuade manufacturers that it was a cool idea to make Braille templates. And what I heard a lot when I was president of ACB from these manufacturers was they didn't want to cooperate with blind people anymore, because they went to a lot of trouble to make Braille templates and nobody wanted them. And when they did want them, nobody ever said thanks. And so essentially what they came to say was, there's just no point in cooperating with people who are blind, because essentially, A, they don't use the stuff, and B, they're ungrateful when they do. So I'd make that point. And then I'd make another one that sort of is going in the opposite direction. If you don't need a really complex mark, there are two substances that really work well with creating marks that are permanent. One is my idea, and I use it quite a lot, and that's a stuff called Highmark that's available from a number of organizations that sell stuff for the blind, and that creates a nice dot or anything like that that you need. The other is to simply use nail polish that you may no longer particularly want to use because it's a really ucky or outmoded color. And when you put it where you want to mark, it actually leaves a nice clear impression that's almost as good as Highmark, if not perhaps better. And the other thing that there is there are little devices called lock dots that are now available. They're a little expensive. I think they're $1.19 for six. But they are little tiny single dots that you can put to mark specific things. They're available, I know, from IRTI, and I think from some other places that sell that kind of stuff. I think also from the venerable and somewhat intriguing Maxi Aids, and perhaps from Independent Living Aids as well. But they're a good product for a quick and easy quick mark that a blind person can do without even having to get messy.
Paul. Those can also be purchased at a Home Depot or Lowe's. I bought mine there, and they come in a variety of sizes.
This is Rachel. That's nice to know that, that some of those are available at places like that. But you don't even need to get that fancy for the longest time. Now, this really depends, too, on how your tactile ability is to be able to feel certain things. But what I did for the longest time is just put Scotch tape on the numbers on the microwave. And what I found, too, is that if I kind of figured out how far it was between the numbers, then I would just need to put tape on certain ones to kind of give me a reference point. So I did that for a long time. The other thing I did with the microwave we have now, when we bought it, I actually thought ahead enough to leave the clear plastic protective sheet over the panel, and I put Braille labels on that. I guess I felt really ambitious then and decided, well, actually, we had a microwave that got a little more complex with, you know, frozen vegetables for one button and ground meat for another. So I put Braille labels on the clear plastic coating that the manufacturer had over the display so that once, you know, if I got to a situation where the labels really started peeling off or, you know, the whole thing got kind of messy with the labels moving or whatever, I could just pull that off and then I'd have a new surface to work with if I had to with the regular panel without doing any damage to that.
I don't think ours had a plastic sheath over it on this particular trip. No, this one didn't. But, Paul, the only way I would disagree with you, and I understand what you're saying, believe me, about the templates. You know, if they were available immediately in the store and they were there and, you know, marked in Braille, hey, that would be great. I mean, but I don't want to wait 6 weeks for something like that. When I'm going to bring a microwave, I'm hungry, man. I want to use it tonight.
It's Debbie. Hi. I guess one time I had with getting overlays for a microwave oven, I was thankful for them until I went to try them out and they weren't the right one for that oven. It was kind of strange. I've labeled using Dymo tape. I think even the label specialties, those labels could be written on and cut to fit, and those would stick better than Dymo tape. And the particular lock dots that Paul mentioned, I don't think, Patty, they're the same ones at Office Depot. The ones that I've seen around at places like Radio Shack and whatever, they're like little feet, and they're bigger than these particular lock dots that are more expensive. But I think the ones that Paul mentioned hold better. Once you put them on, it's pretty hard to move them, so you need to make sure that they're in the right place. But I love them. I like them better than those little feet. They're less obtrusive. I have them even on the thumb keys on my Braille note. I really like them.
I would agree with both positions mentioned regarding the labels. I think it's a great idea, the templates. I've never heard of such a thing happening here, so
I've seen them.
Oh, you've seen them?
Yeah.
Okay. I think that might be
for a long time, though.
That might be part of the problem, lack of publicity about them. But, yeah, you don't want to have to wait 6 weeks for them. Surely they should put them in the box. I mean, people will use them if they put them in with the packaging and the rest of the thing. Anyway, one thing that occurred to me that's a really useful tip, and in fact, probably Amanda should be the one to mention this because she's the one who actually did it. One thing we did for identifying jars and tins and things is we got a roll of magnetic Dymo tape. It probably doesn't really have much of a resemblance to real Dymo tape except perhaps the shape of it. It's quite expensive stuff. But it's really good because you can do labels for regularly purchased tins, and if you get jars that have the metal lids, which a lot of them tend to be these days, you can use them for those too. So things like sauces and, I don't know, tin tomatoes and or tomatoes, as you guys would say, and, you know, tin pineapples and whatever else. And it means that when you buy one of these, you can grab your magnetic Dymo label that you've already done and stick it on the tin lid. And as long as you remember to take it off again when you open the tin, it's quite a useful thing. And we store all the ones we're not currently using on our fridge door, so when we need to grab another one, it's easily found. It doesn't mean occasionally someone comes along and says, "What's all the braille on your fridge door?" And we have to explain that it's nothing of any significance, but that's the deal. So that's proved to be quite a useful thing for us to use in the kitchen, because once having done those labels, there's no ongoing expense or real work, really. You just pick up your label and stick it on.
This is Rachel Kay from Melbourne, Australia. Anyway, I was just going to add to Rachel Espy's point about the braille label on the microwave. Instead of actually just cutting little bits of label and putting them on, we actually, of course, I had my my sighted assistance for my dad, but we actually put the whole label, like, on the panel, like a whole thing. And when I was braille, I've braille, like, dots for all the numbers, and I had them lined up, or Dad lined them up, sort of he lined it up for me, like the cursor, where I could put the dots, and then Dad just stuck it on the panel of the microwave, making sure that the dots were sort of over the numbers, and of course the label is clear, so you know, you can sort of, sort of, people can use it quite easily.
The other Rachel, again, I like your idea, Jeff and Amanda, and actually that's the one that I've used as well. You can purchase those magnetic labels. I would guess that we're talking about the same ones. At least when I, last time I purchased them, which was actually a while ago, I was able to get them the same place I got my Dymo tape label. And right this minute, I can't remember where that is, but usually if they have one, they're going to have the other. And the other neat little side note on that is if there are items that you use quite a bit, throw the magnetic tape on your fridge and you've instantly got part of your shopping list for next time. So That always helps.
The last microwave that I bought, I didn't bother to put labels on. I wrote down what all the controls were on a Braille light or some such machine. And there is enough space between the, or enough contrast, so that you can actually pick out the little push elements, and so I find it actually pretty easy to count. I suppose that I might put one dot somewhere, but I've found that it hasn't really been necessary for me to put that on, as long as I've got a clear notion of what's there and a reasonably good memory. The other thing that I'd say about the whole manufacturer's template things is that it's not likely that they're ever going to be in the box, because Braille, producing Braille, especially on the plastic the way they did, is relatively expensive. But what I used to do when I was going to buy a product and wanted that sort of thing was to call up in advance and ask the manufacturers that, and most of us have a pretty good idea of what brand of machine we want, what models they had templates for. And then I'd go and take a look, and once I decided on the one that I wanted, I would immediately call the company and indicate this is the one I was going to buy and would they please send the template. And usually I had the template actually before I had the machine. It took most manufacturers no more than 2 or 3 days to send them out, because there was always one person in the company who was kind of the template person, and so you got really direct and pretty immediate service from the companies.
Back to food, I don't know how many like to prepare fresh garlic. We live in an area where there's a lot of fresh fruits and vegetables available, and I hardly use anything frozen anymore. And I have found that the one thing about fresh garlic was getting the paper off of the garlic bulb. I was tapping the garlic against the counter, and it would take me a lot of extra time and thumping, and occasionally one of the garlic cloves would spring free, and Dave's retired dog doesn't like garlic, but once in a while he samples it, and there's a bitten into piece of garlic clove on the floor. Well, I discovered a little rubber, a sort of a rubber tube that I got at Bed Bath & Beyond. And if you put a couple of garlic cloves into that, and you roll it around pretty hard on the counter, and once in a while the garlic will decide to exit out of there, but if you're careful and you know it's likely to happen, you can just be a little careful, and your paper comes off of the garlic clove. All you have to do then is remove the clove and then put it into the press that I use. And I find it very easy, much easier than it used to be, and I can just take and remove the paper from the little tube, and everything is set up.
Is this tube called a garlic paper removing tube, or is it just a piece of rubber tubing that was bought at Bed Bath & Beyond that happens to serve that purpose?
I don't know what the actual name of it is, but I remember it did have a name. But no, it is designed for garlic. In fact, Rita, our cleaning lady, saw it on TV in one of the food channels.
Just going back a little bit to Debbie asking, you know, what time dinner was and all that. And so, Debbie, it's funny that you have been leery of using charcoal as opposed to gas. I've been leery of using gas as opposed to charcoal. Maybe it's just because what you know. And I've done charcoal since I was, a wee young lad. And so that's what I do. I like it. And that's the nice thing about the chimney that I use. You know, you can control your fire. Of course, you control it in advance. You can't just push it up and down. But if you want a, big fire, you put a whole hefty bunch in there. And if you don't want a small fire, you put a small bunch, and you're on your way. And I think the Weber kettle that I still use to this day, I think it cost us $17 to begin with, and that was 13 years ago.
Okay, on the garlic situation, my mom mashes the garlic at the side of a knife, and the paper comes off real easy that way.
I have a question about labeling, and I hope there's someone out there who can help me. This is Patty, and I'm up in the Maine country, and I'm in need of a calendar. I have a voicemail, and every now and then it gets out of whack, and I lose everything on it, especially in the appointment direction. And I'm open to suggestions for a calendar.
There are several places you can get one. Of course, you need to buy those. APH has a very nice desk calendar that looks, it's a board, and it's got 5x7 cards, and it's got one card for every day. If you needed more room, then you could, make another card and slip in there. You can also do the same thing if you buy 5x7 cards, write out the month, just like Braille calendars look, and then you can just write the days and put them in the notebook behind that month, so that then you can also have like a month at a glance to see, what days they are. Now that, the whole project for that would cost you about $10.
Three quick points. First, with regard to garlic, I have tried this and it actually does work. And it seems awfully simple, but if you take a clove of garlic and lay that clove of garlic on its side, and then press down on it with the palm of your hand, and press harder and harder and harder, you'll eventually hear it go pop. And when it goes pop, what's actually happened is the paper has essentially been released from it, and it can be very easily taken off. So that's one thing. With regard to a calendar, Patty, it's a little unclear what you're talking about. So let me give you a suggestion that a lot of us use. If we're trying to keep just a record that sort of protects us against the disappearance of our calendars from electronic machines, what we often do is keep something that's simply on a piece of braille paper that is that you can put in and out of a Perkins brailler and then go ahead and braille on it. And the approach that we used was to not attempt to write down whole dates because it A, took too long, and B, wasn't necessary. So we would write a series of five numbers as a single five-number element. So number sign, two letters for the month, so 02, two letters for the date, so 01, and then use the numbers 1 through 7, starting with Monday, for the days of the week. So with a five-digit number, you can end up with the date, and then just put what your appointment is and kind of throw it in a piece of braille paper, and it's a very, very fast, doesn't take any time, and constitutes a really easy way of keeping track of dates and writing them down very quickly so that you can very easily interpret them and know exactly the day that your appointment is on.
As far as a braille reference calendar is concerned, and as a few people said, it's a little unclear exactly what the person wants in a calendar specific to their query, but the cutest, most convenient sized reference calendar I have ever seen is one that Dave Williams has, and in fact left here for us to have when he visited. And I understand that he got his through Steve Bauer, who broadcasts with ACB Radio Interactive. And I think it's something that Steve makes available to anyone who wants to organize it. I get the impression, due to the thing written on the front page, that this is something that's more generally available, but it doesn't say exactly where you get it from. But it's got each of the months from January, or this particular one is January 2005 through to and including January 2006, which I think is a useful overlap. And it also has two pages of American public holidays, starting with New Year's Day and going right through until Christmas Day. And it's hard to describe the size, but it's very small, definitely pocket-sized, which is why I think it's particularly useful, because for someone who's doing a job where they need quick and easy access to a calendar, this would be ideal. And on the front page it says 2005, sponsored by Wichita Downtown Lions Club and the Air Capital Telephone Reader, and presumably the telephone number for the telephone reader. So I don't know if that helps anyone identify where these are from, but it's an incredibly useful-looking thing, and certainly if I was doing a job where I needed quick and easy access to a calendar, I would be snapping them up.
This is Debbie. Braille Action Fund also makes a little pocket-size one. It's, oh gosh, maybe it's 5x5. It's spiral-bound, and it has a different day for a different page for every month, and then it has one or two pages for personal dates. But I think if I understand you, Patty, it sounds to me like you're wanting something more of what, like Paul was describing.
I don't remember where they're available from, but they are. Jeff, there's actually a calendar that's even smaller than that. It's a single tiny plastic sheet, and I can't even remember how it works now. But it actually does allow you to figure out what day of the week every day of the year is on. I remember being most impressed with how clever it was, but it's a tiny plastic sheet. If anybody on the program remembers them, by all means jump in and talk about them. But, I'm thinking it might have been from, maybe CNIB or maybe even NLS. Had them for a while. But they're a single, tiny, probably 3x5 sheet that allows you to figure out what day every day is on in the year.
This is Rachel, and I know what you're talking about. Actually, I have one of those calendars that Jeff is talking about, and the one that Dave left for you is one I finally got to him after who knows how long, because I was so impressed with them that Steve sent me some. Those things are great. I carry it with me all the time, and I'm a power note-taker user, but there are just times when you need to have that Braille. I know what you're talking about, Paul, and the one that I'm thinking about is almost like a playing card size calendar, and I remember it came from APH, and it came with this this big sheet of one sheet of instructions as to how to read it, and it was pretty clever. I don't think I ever really took the time to figure it out, but it was kind of neat because it was small enough that you could put it in your wallet.
Are these just Braille calendars, and they're not electronic, obviously?
Yes, it's Debbie. I remember that too. They are Braille calendars, and I also think it came from APH. And I remember that I thought it was clever, but I didn't want to do it that way. I just always preferred a regular calendar, but it was clever. I think it had, maybe it gave the day of the first day of every month and the day of the week that it was, or maybe it gave, I don't remember, maybe it gave the dates of the day of the first day of the week for every month, like four different days for every month or something, but it did all fit on a card.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly how it worked, but it was reasonably easy to figure out what date you were looking for. And, of course, it was very handy to have it because it was just a single page. And I remember thinking, gosh, we could have been building those for ourselves for piles of time. And, yes, Shelley, we're talking right now about Braille calendars. But, of course, we can talk about anything else in terms of tips and tricks.
One point that Nama made in our private conversation on the side that we have that we're able to do while we're doing this setup, in terms of keeping track of appointments and things, as she pointed out, that if you've got one of these phones that you can run speech software on, that they have usually have calendar applications built in. So if you have something like that already, there's no need to get an extra device. It's not something I've really used much. There'd be other people who would have used it more. I think actually Nama might be one of them, but it is something to keep in mind that these phones actually do a lot, and that's one of the things that they do.
I'm looking for a talking Bible because I've just recently started joining Bible Study Fellowship, and it would be nice if I had a talking Bible for that.
It's Debbie. I think there are, I can't remember if it's Bible Alliance or whatever, but I think there are talking Bibles out there. One of my favorite tips and tricks that I'm always kind of seeking out more of and fascinated with are ways to travel more easily, ways to schlep stuff, carry stuff, and I like to find ways of carrying things on wheels. I have a little cart that I first got at Home Depot. I don't know if they carry it anymore. I know there's someplace on the internet that someone else found me one, and I should go looking again and let you all know. But it's a cart called Pack and Roll, and when it's folded up, it looks like a little suitcase, I mean really small, and when it's unfolded, it reminds me of an old-fashioned carrier that a milkman would deliver milk in years ago. And it's just handy for carrying some things around after going to the store or going out and not wanting to have it unfolded right away and then, you know, unfolding it at a time of, oh, yeah, okay, I need some other way to carry this stuff. I'm you know, one for finding briefcases on wheels, backpacks on wheels, other kinds of carts that I've found for for shopping, or suitcases on wheels. I mean, I'm just always fascinated with that because I know I carry too much on my shoulders, and so things like that are really a big help.
You should see the luggage Bo bought at Disney last year. They're all on wheels, and they have these big, long handles that you pull out. They push down into the luggage when you're not using them. The whole set stacks together, and you can pull out these long handles and pull them, and you can hook the whole set together and pull it. And it's there's four of them, all the way from a huge bag to a weekender. It's really a nice set. They've got drink holders in them, everything. I mean, it's pretty cool luggage. Karen, it's a Bible Courier. I have never seen one, but I understand that it's very accessible, and it not only reads the Bible, the Bible's built in, and you can search. I don't know if you can actually type in a particular chapter and verse that you're looking for, but you can search by book, by chapter, and I think by verse. Or you can, read. But I don't know if you can actually type in a particular thing that you're looking for. But it's called a Bible Courier.
This is Rachel, and let me see if I can get all these points in here. The Bible Courier... it's electronic. It's about the size of a pager. And there again, I don't know either if you can type in anything. But it uses the double talk speech, if I remember right. And you can plug a headphone in and you've got all the Old and New Testament in that. With regard to a computer calendar, Karen, one of the things, if you don't want to use Outlook, Microsoft Outlook, which, although it's accessible, some people don't want to fool with it because it hasn't been extremely accessible for very long. Another one is Anytime Deluxe, and I haven't used it in a little while because I have way too many different ways to keep calendars, and that was one that I just haven't used now for a while. But I did used to use it at a prior job, and I do know that it worked with Windows XP. It's very easy to use, and your appointments kind of reminds me of that they kind of end up on a text-type document situation, so it's really easy to navigate with speech. As far as the luggage situation, I'm doing a lot of traveling recently, and one of the things I carry around with me is my computer, and I now have a computer roller case. And what I've done along with that, is depending on what I have to carry, but if I'm only gone for a few days, I have this one kind of duffel bag suitcase kind of thing, and it has a strap on the back of it. So what I do is I stack it, and I'm sure it's made to do this, but I pull the handle up from the computer case, stack that on top of the computer case, but put the pull-up handle through that strap so that I'm only having to wheel one thing around, and that's really come in very handy for me.
The Bible Courier is not easily searchable. It has some very minimal search features. You can move among books. It's not even really, really easy to move among chapters either. It can be done, and it does work, and the speech is pretty good, and it's a nice device. Almost any of the blind Bible foundations, and there are a bunch of them, Karen, will provide you with a taped copy of the Bible that you can keep. That's not a big deal. And then the third place where you can certainly get a Bible is on any of the sites that have public domain books will certainly have several versions of the Bible which are available free for downloading, and then you can just put them in your computer and load them into Word if you want, and then you can actually search for the specific things that you want. You can also, of course, take the various books apart. Probably the easiest place to get them from, and I'm assuming they're there, is on Bookshare. because you don't have to be a member to download their public domain books. And I'm sure that if you just go into the search field and type in Bible, you'll be able to download a number of versions that should meet your needs, Karen. Somebody just sent me an instant message to say that the place that you can check in order to find all sorts of Bibles is a place called BiblesForTheBlind.org. So www.BiblesForTheBlind.org. Let me take just a minute because I recently ran across something that I think is a resource that all of us A ought to use and B ought to contribute to. There is a guy who for a long time worked at the American Printing House for the Blind, who most of the people on this program probably know. His name is Fred Gissoni, and Fred used to publish a little tiny column every month or so that would appear on the APH website. And wherever you would meet Fred, he was sort of a font of knowledge about all kinds of little things. And he was a collector of ideas and a publicizer of ideas. Well, I think partly to honor Fred and partly also to be sure that all of his ideas get saved for posterity, APH has a section of their website now, which is called Fred's Head. And Fred's Head has now been turned into a database with just under 21,000 entries. And it's very easily searchable in several ways, by category, by keyword, some other approaches. There is the Fred Head's companion that actually allows you to receive podcasts that are specifically put together by the folks who do Fred's Head. The person who's in charge of it at APH is a guy called Michael McCarty, M-C-C-A-R-T-Y. And he welcomes calls from folks. He's doing this full time. It's really cool. The other feature that makes it a little interesting is you have a text version of all of the entries, and then below them you have a listen link. And what that listen link takes you to is a very reasonable sounding female voice who actually reads you the article reasonably slowly and reasonably clearly. But Fred's Head is certainly a place to find an immense number of tips and tricks on all sorts of subjects, on access technology, on labeling clothing. I have no idea whether there are charcoal tips or calendar tips, but it certainly wouldn't surprise me if there are. And I would encourage people to take a look for it. So once more, www.aph.org. On the main page, look for Fred's Head. And once you get onto Fred's Head, kind of take it from there. But it is really a wonderful resource. And I think that all of us need to compliment the American Printing House for the Blind for making this service available free of charge and for encouraging input from other blind people so this single database of tips and tricks can grow to become absolutely huge and wonderfully useful.
On the subject of Braille things, on things other than Braille paper, it just occurs to me that when I go... and also Amanda's in this too, when we go overseas, it's really important to have information such as your flight details and things like travel insurance, policy numbers and emergency phone numbers and calling card numbers. And what I tend to do usually coming up to the time that I go away is try and find pocket-sized pieces of material kit which meant it fit nicely into the satchel that my airline ticket comes in. And also... it was, because it was long and thin, it was long enough to contain all the details I could possibly want about each of my flights in both directions. So that was quite useful, and I was able to use my smaller pieces of acquired flotsam for other things like phone numbers and policy numbers and things.
This is Rachel, and I don't know if you said this already, Jeff. What I also carry around with me is a card slate, and it's there's two different kinds. One of them is like the standard slate that you can open up. There's a hinge on this side you can open up, put the card in. The one that I tend to carry around more, it's all one piece, and you can slide the card in, and it's only big enough to hold a 3x5 card. So you can slide that card in and braille what you need to braille, and then just pull it out. And it makes it really easy to use, and it's really easy to carry around several 3x5 cards. I actually have done that a lot for work purposes. If I needed to give someone my information, this is in substitution of having braille business cards, which I haven't done yet. I'll just put all my information on a 3x5 card, which tends to work out a little bit better because there's more room for email addresses in that, but it's just really easy.
It's Debbie. I often will carry a slate with me. I have two different sizes, but I'll often carry one with a regular pad of paper, thin paper, so I can write faster on a slate. And sometimes I just want a way to make quick notes that isn't using a note taker, or if I don't bring a note taker with me, I just want a way to make quick notes. So, and sometimes the pads that have the little spiral binders, I hook the stylus through the spiral binder part, and it's just a way of holding the stylus there and not losing it if I'm sitting in a meeting.
This is Jeff from Brisbane again. One other Braille-related tip that comes to mind is that for things that you only want to keep for a temporary amount of time, you know, something that you don't necessarily want to keep forever, like notes and so on, one thing we do is we get buy A4 print paper that's reasonably thick for print paper, but it's, you know, it's still considerably thinner than Braille paper. But Braille will last on that, you know, for a reasonable amount of time. Like, for example, I do a shift in fact, I'm going to do one tomorrow morning at what you guys would call a local radio reading service. And the first item of business, I'm doing the early morning shift of 6 a.m. to 8 a.m., and one of the first orders of business is to do the rundown of the schedule. Now, I'm familiar with the schedule because it's not changed much in the last 4 years that I've been with the station. But there's, you know, the things that that a particular program covers on that particular day of the week or that particular week is the thing that's going to vary, you know, the particular topic that's being discussed or whatever. So I will usually make myself some notes so that I can tell the listener something a little bit more informative than such and such a program is on at 2:30, because if I know that it's on at 2:30 and don't need to look it up, then chances are half the listeners do too, and they want to know what's specifically going to be on. And for that sort of thing, where it's only of usefulness for a short amount of time, I just braille this on a sheet of A4 print paper, because I only need to make small notes. Because it's A4, I can fit a number of short lines on the page, and that's quite well suited to the task. And at the end of it, I can just chuck it in the recycling bin and be done with it, because there's no need to hang on to it. And I guess the other thing that I do, I do use regular braille paper for the weather forecast, which is the other thing I have to read on these shifts. But if I have to use a fresh piece of paper, I'll usually bring that home with me and braille on it. Braille on the other side of it when there's a need for a piece of braille paper again, so again, that saves money and it's also environmentally friendly.
All these blind people talking about print paper, interesting. When you have a bunch of print paper that has print on it and you're trying to figure out what's what, I had a job that required me to work with a lot of print paper that I either had to scan or do something with, and sometimes a limited amount of space. So what I tended to do with all that to try to keep sorted out what was what, I might put a paper clip on one stack, because sometimes I'd have to stack stacks on top of each other, and I'd put a paper clip on one stack, I'd put a rubber band on the other, or if I had to, I would set them down in such a way one vertically oriented, the other one oriented the other way, so I could just pick up a stack and know what it was.
One thing I've noticed is that with some photocopying and some laser printing, you can feel the printing on the page, not well enough to be able to read it, but to be able to do the patterning. And for example, I would bring a number of A4 pages home from school, and apart from the fact that the newsletters were on yellow paper, which I was fortunately able to see, they also printed it in two wide columns on an A4 page on both sides, so there were four columns in all, rather than, you know, across, you know, short, many short lines, they'd have two wide columns. And because it was pretty much that all I ever had that was printed that way, finding the newsletter was quite an easy thing to do because you could feel the way the printing went. So that's one thing. And the other thing that we do, and particularly in relation to bills, but it would also work for storing documents as well, is Braille on envelopes. And if you take an envelope, take the items out of the envelope and put the envelope in a Brailler, the Braille comes up quite well and lasts quite well too. And you just Braille on the details that you need. For example, if we get a bill, I'll often get things, you know, write down things like the amount, or when it's due, any pertinent things I need, like a bill number or so on. And then I've got all the salient points that I need to have.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us this evening on our discussion of tips and tricks. I think we've actually managed to cover quite a broad array of things, and most of them are pretty relevant and pertinent to folks in everyday life. I hope that we'll find some other ways as time goes on of sharing tips and tricks, and hope that many of you will go and take a look at Fred's Head at aph.org, which I really think is a good resource for folks to take a look at and begin to help to build. So, on behalf of Rachel and Debbie, who did the recordings tonight, on behalf of Dave Williams, who's responsible for editing, and on behalf of all who participated in the program tonight, George Byes, who made the software, and me, Paul Edwards, who has the privilege of hosting this program, I'd like to thank everyone for your participation and all of you who listened for joining us on ACB Radio, the voice of the blind community. Next week on Tuesday Topics, we're going to take a look at what the differences are in the way that services are delivered to blind people in the United States as compared to other countries. Join us on Tuesday Topics on ACB Radio, the voice of the blind community.